This sermon was downloaded from www.spiritnerds.org. We equip Christians with thousands of strategic spiritual materials daily. Join millions of Christians around the world who have come to Spirit Nerds to learn about God and His Word today.
Of applause for her. I think she really ended on a powerful note where we are reminded that the work will be done by all of us. You know, when I think it was when Vuzi was speaking about courage, a thought dropped in my mind, and it was that if I was, you know, alive, and I don't know if we're all alive when we're still struggling for independence, you know, would we have achieved it? You know, if every one of us thinks about ourselves the way a number of us do today, would we have risen up for something for the common cause of Nigeria? Would there even be a Nigeria? So it's a thought to take home, really. I don't know what your thought is, but it's about taking that one thing that would drive you to action from this place. But congratulations on being a part of that small minority, that small group of people. Whether you're watching from, you know, diaspora or you're here, you're definitely part of that small group, that minority group that's going to take Nigeria forward. So congratulations. Our next speaker is Dr. Joe Abba. Dr. Joe Abba is a globally recognized expert in governance, institutional reforms, political economy analysis, and change management. From 2013 to 2017, he served as the Director General of the Bureau of Public Service Reforms in the Nigerian presidency, where he made giant strides in citizen-focused public sector reforms. Before his role as DG, Dr. Abba led key programs for the UK Department for International Development, DFID, in Nigeria, contributing to waste management privatization, water board reform, and the establishment of the Abuja Enterprise Agency in the UK. And in the UK, he played a pivotal role in public sector reforms from the Prime Minister's Office of Public Service Reforms in the Cabinet Office. During his tenure as Director General, Dr. Abba championed the use of the national identity number for the National Identity Management System, significantly expanding the NIMSI database. His work also streamlined processes for driver's licenses, passports, and tax clearance certificates while instituting reforms in numerous agencies and government parastatals. Even outside government, Dr. Abba continues to impact governance globally. He contributed to Nigeria's National Development Plan for 2021 to 2025, supported public financial management reforms in his home state, Ebonyi, which attracted over $56 million in grants from the World Bank and trained the government of Brazil at Oxford University. He is a sought-after speaker, having delivered the 2023 keynote address at MIT's Africa Innovate Conference. Dr. Abba holds a PhD in governance and public policy analysis. He's a barrister and solicitor in Nigeria and a solicitor in England and Wales. He is currently the Vice President and Country Director of DAI Global, an international development company active in over 100 countries. His expertise and contributions continue to shape governance and reforms worldwide. Please join me once again as we welcome to the platform Dr. Joe Abba.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me start by thanking Pastor and Mrs. Oyemade for inviting me again to speak at the platform. It's a great honor to be in this auspicious gathering. And thank you for all of the arrangements that brought me here. As you know, I'm a process person, so I'm constantly examining how things work. And let me say that your staff have been excellent. So well done to them. You know, when they read your profile like they've just done now, you start thinking, I hope this person will live up to this hype that has been formed about him. But it's not only us that you invited, Pastor and Mrs. Oyemade. You're going to get two for the price of one today. Because you will have Joe Abba, the part-time academic, for about 15 minutes. And then the one that is to come after him, I'm not fit to tie his laces. You will also get the Ezemore of Wazubia. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Come one, come all. The Ezemore will be in the market square in 15 minutes. Tell the spirits, tell the birds, tell the humans. But before Ezemore comes, we need to focus first on the reasons why we want Africa to rise, the reasons why Africa has been bedeviled with a number of the challenges that it currently has. And it's important to consider why Africa is where it is today, because as our people say, if you don't know where the rain started beating you from, you won't know when you started to get dry. So why is Africa currently underdeveloped? As the moderator has said, I'm a part-time academic, and of course, I've had the privilege of reviewing a lot of the literature around this topic. And there are many theories. You know, some say that the problem is our culture. And that in countries that are not developed, in societies that are not developed, those societies tend to have inbuilt constraints that hamper its development. And so those that develop have a better culture than those that don't. Some have even gone further to say that societies are collectively mentally programmed to behave in particular ways. So they argue that the Germans will always be on time. The African will always be late because of African time. And while some of these can be persuasive, it doesn't explain the differences within the same societies. So it doesn't explain why, for instance, within the same so-called collective mental programming, the private sector outperforms the public sector in a lot of cases. It also doesn't explain why, when you take the same people who are supposedly collectively mentally programmed and you put them in two different countries, like you have North Korea and South Korea, and what was East Germany and West Germany, you still get differences in performance despite this so-called collective mental programming. So it doesn't really add up, does it? And by the way, every society has its own culture, some good, some bad. In every society, there are good and bad cultural practices. And a lot of the societies that have developed, at least over the last 50 years, have done so by integrating their culture, the positive aspects of their culture, into their quest for development. And it can be done. Many of you will remember the first Coming to America film, when the Prince of Zamunda wanted to marry this young American lady. And the king was saying to the queen, "Our culture will never allow it." And the queen turned to him and said, "I thought you were the king." And of course, the king changed that culture, and the prince married the woman of his dreams. So we can change whatever culture we have. Another group of academics say it is history, and that the choices you make today or the choices you made yesterday are what is affecting your today. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I mean, if you don't invest in your electricity infrastructure for 40 years, you know, why are you surprised you don't have lights? And if you make corruption your state policy, then why are you surprised that you're poor? So a lot of these things make sense. The Nigerian academic, Professor Peter Eke of blessed memory, and many other, you know, Walter Rodney has written about how Europe and underdeveloped Africa. Professor Eke said it was colonialism, and he wrote a very interesting theoretical statement that says that in the mind of every post-colonial, there are two publics, right? One public, which is the civic public, which is our government, our new way of working, and then the primordial public, which is our villages and, you know, where we really come from. And his thesis was that in the mind of every post-colonial, you are expected to extract from the civic public to feed the primordial public. Okay, and that's why some of us, when we're DG, our people called us together and said, you are not performing. They didn't mean you are not doing your job. That's not what they meant. You are not performing because you are not taking from the civic public to feed the primordial public. Some even go as far back as slavery to explain why we are where we are today. However, in a lot of Africa, it's been more than 60 years. It is not slavery that is making us steal the resources of our people. It is not colonialism that is making us not educate our people. All of these things are important, and they need to be recognized, but we can make a change, just like many other societies have done. Why then haven't we made these changes? People will say, well, it's leadership. Of course, even our respected Chinua Achebe once said, you know, the problem with Nigeria is simply and squarely leadership. So leadership is important, absolutely. However, we have leaders in all spheres. Many of them are here. Many of them have spoken today. So why is leadership not a problem in their spheres of life? Why is it not a problem? Why are the same public servants who are unable to lead leading in their churches, leading in their villages, leading in their communities? What is the disconnect? Why have we not produced a Lee Kuan Yew? Why have we not produced a Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum of Dubai? Why have we not produced the kind of leaders that have transformed China? And it's easy to look at these examples and say, well, the ruler of Dubai is a monarch, right? He has ultimate power. And so, of course, it's easier to make the kind of changes that he made. Lee Kuan Yew didn't start off as a Democrat. Many of the countries that have developed over the last 50 years did not develop due to democracy. Okay, they developed and then they embraced democracy in one form or the other. And some have even said, look, if you look at all the examples of Singapore, China, UAE, perhaps what we need is benevolent dictatorship. Have you heard that? The problem is that for some reason, dictators in Africa tend not to be benevolent. And so while democracy has its challenges, it remains the least bad of all the other options that are available, as Winston Churchill said. And so this process of this inability to produce the kind of leaders that are needed to transform society, people blame on weak institutions. And institutions here, I mean the way things are done in a society. So, you know, if you want to, I'm married to a Yoruba woman, I'm an Igbo man, and by our culture, we don't bow down to anybody. We don't. Even our traditional gods, we remind them that when they get too powerful, we will show them the tree we carved them from. But when I wanted to marry my wife, my friend, flat. And so, like culture, institutions can also be changed. And institutions are changed by people who make a decision to change those institutions. Just like the people that have changed these economies made a decision, they made a conscious choice that they were going to vision a better society and execute that better society. Yet others have talked about a moment of dignity. And so a society gets to a point where it feels, no, we're not going to be silly anymore. We're not going to let anybody push us around. We're going to forge a new society. And that is what China was said to have done when it lost the war to Britain and had to cede Hong Kong. You know, the Chinese decided, okay, we've lost this war, but never again will anybody disrespect us. We won't attack anybody, we won't colonize anybody, but nobody will disrespect us again. Very attractive. Problem is, when will that moment come? How long do we have to wait for it? Is there another factor that we need to look at that lies behind the development of these societies? Not just, and the growth of these societies, not just the usual ones that we know, like UAE, Singapore, and all the others, but, you know, upcoming ones like Bangladesh, Indonesia. What factor is it that propels their development? Joaba doesn't know, but he knows a man that does. And so he has asked the Ezemo to consult the gods and try and get an answer to this all-important question. And as Ezemo comes, let me please advise. He has a funny character. And so if he comes out and you don't clap, he will not speak. He is that kind of person. So because he's very shy, it is only the clapping that will encourage him. Okay, so let me... let me now go and get him. Ezemo has written a letter, which he's just going to read. This one looks like an ancient manuscript. I wonder what it says. Let's see. Oh, the first letter of St. Paul to the Nigerians. Unamata, don't tire me. I think this is the wrong letter. Let me. We'll read this one another day. This is the first letter of Ezemo to the Wazobians. I, Ezemo, mouthpiece of the gods, half man, half spirit, the moon that shines for the entire community, the gentle lion that kills two elephants at the same time while other hunters are chasing rabbits in the bush. I bring you the greetings of the gods. Before we start, Ezemo is thirsty. But before we drink, we must pour libation to our ancestors. We only need to give them a little, though, because the dead are not as thirsty as the living. Okay. Where were we? Since we met at this market square, Wazobia has elected a new Igwe. However, other contestants for the Igwe's too are still protesting the emergence of the new Igwe. Some have even gone to court to ask him to lift his loincloth so that they can tell whether he was a man or a woman when he went to school. Ezemo cannot understand why all the contests cannot be concluded before a new Igwe is sworn in. In our custom, we only carry a wrestler shoulder high in victory after he has thrown Amalinze the cat and all other wrestlers to emerge victorious. To swear in an Igwe when the contests are still ongoing is not helpful. As the lawyers will say, possession is 9/10 of the law. Think Amo. Since the new Igwe ascended the throne, he's taking some tough decisions. Most people agreed that these decisions needed to be taken. Even his fellow contestants all promised to take the same decisions that he has taken if they were to be declared winners. However, as is often the case with Wazobia, the announcement was made before the plan to implement it was developed. Now Wazobians are suffering. Does Igwe go through with the policy and watch Wazobians continue to suffer? Or does he reverse himself and appear weak and clueless? It is like the proverbial sesame fly that has landed on the scrotum. If you leave it, it will cause you pain and give you sleeping sickness. If you decide to swat it, the pain it will cause you will make your brain reset. Ezemo can see all the men in this market square crossing their legs in sympathy pain. It's the kind of pain that every man feels when the football hits a footballer in the groin. Igwe has asked for time and made certain promises that will reduce the pain that Ndi Wazobia feel. Ndi Wazobia call it palliative. Ezemo went to check the meaning of the word palliative in the big book that Ndi Beke, the white people, call dictionary. It means something that addresses the symptoms without addressing the root cause. At least for once, we are using the term correctly. Wazobians are saying, at least give us the palliatives. If we must suffer this pain, help us reduce the intensity of the pain. In the meantime, the Igwe has assembled the largest cabinet ever known to Wazobia. And so Wazobians are not seeing the Igwe tightening his own belt while he asked them to tighten their own. Ndi Omiwu, the people that make the laws that people call legislators, are not helping matters either. As Wazobians are struggling to breathe. They are emailing prayers to themselves. And the laborers say, enough is enough. It is either we get our own prayers in our emails, or we will stop working in the farms from tomorrow. Just yesterday, Igwe announced that each low-grade laborer will receive 25,000 prayers in their emails from this month. And the laborer shouted, ah, Igwe, all of us are low-grade laborers now. You need to extend this to all of us. And that money is too small. You need to add something now, Igwe. Add something. I understand that Igwe has agreed to add another 10,000 prayers and that the laborers are now discussing whether to agree and actually turn up in the farms tomorrow. Although some in the private sector have already increased the wages of their laborers, not all of them have done so. It's also not yet clear whether the laborers in the 36 villages that make up Wazobia would similarly get the same 35,000 prayers. Ezemo will continue to suffer sacrifices to the gods so that the pain of Wazobians can be reduced. Although Ezemo now notices that even the sacrifices he places in the four corner junctions are being eaten by humans. Now, before Ezemo arrived at the market square today, the town crier, one native doctor like that, had posed the question about how Africa can rise to provide more prosperity for its people. Ezemo has consulted the gods, and they revealed to him that the key to prosperity is to raise productive capacity. The villages that are wealthy simply produce more. And they don't only produce more, they produce more of what people want to consume. The people in the village called China got out of poverty by increasing their productive capacity. Every backyard in China is a factory. Every store in the world is full of Chinese products. The people of the village of India focused on producing more technology experts. Now many technology companies in the world are run by Indians. The government of India only joined the bandwagon after the citizens themselves had taken the lead. The people of Bangladesh did not wait for their institutions to be perfect and for corruption to fall to zero. They focused on producing more clothing than anybody else except China. Even here in Wazobia, the Nollywood industry is the second most prolific producer of films in the world, second only to India's Bollywood. As has been said, our music industry is recognized and appreciated globally. They did not wait for government. What government can do is to help them protect their copyright from piracy and make it easier for them to access capital to produce more of what people obviously want to consume. The Wazobian fintech industry is the leader in Africa. Governments can make it easier for them to access capital and should ensure that the central barn where Wazobian yams are kept does not continue to impede their progress with retrogressive regulations. Retrogressive, kwa ha, is a more in our so-kwa English. In essence, The message from the gods is raise first your productive capacity and everything else will be added onto you. To raise productive capacity, Africa must make it easier to access capital. It must make an effort to turn its raw materials into finished products, no matter how the quality is at the start. Villages like Taiwan and China had the quality of their products laughed at the beginning. Our Nollywood industry, a few years ago, used to contain ghosts that check both sides of the road before they cross. Now, they have improved. And the world is paying billions for their expertise. Africa is blessed with raw materials to produce mobile phones, solar panels, electric cars, and so on. And so it must focus on technology and innovation. It must continue to fight corruption, as no society can develop if its commonwealth is stolen by a few. More people that make money must pay taxes, but those taxes must be streamlined such that entrepreneurs are not unduly burdened and made to pay for the inefficiencies of the state itself. Africa must trade more with itself. The potential of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement is clear for all to see. Africa must tackle climate change. We didn't cause it, but we are experiencing the most damaging of its effects. And when a visitor has come and put rubbish in your house, you first clean the rubbish, and then you ask them to be responsible for their action. Now, what's the role of Wazobia if Africa is to rise? Well, Wazobia is known as Africa's firstborn, not because he was the first to be born as a nation. He has brothers like Egypt, Ethiopia, Sudan, who were recognized as nations before the coming together of Wazobia. But he's seen as the firstborn because he's the most blessed in the entire family. Like the biblical Joseph, Wazobia was the one that the father gave the coat of many colors. Instead of using this diversity of peoples and resources to actualize the dreams of a better tomorrow for his people, Wazobia has been engaged in unhelpful pettiness, such as your color must not come close to my color. We are green. We don't trust the people of blue. The real Wazobians know that it is the richness of every color that makes Joseph's coat magnificent. Wazobia needs to find a way to solve its challenges with electricity. No nation can grow without electricity. Electricity is key to raising productive capacity. Finally, we're often intrigued as to who ascends the throne. And this is vitally important because we cannot ignore the importance of leadership. However, as a Frenchman, Jean-Jacques Rousseau once said, and I quote, "Before examining the act by which a nation elects a king, it will be proper to examine the act by which a nation becomes a nation. For this act, being necessarily anterior to the other, is the real foundation of society." Wazobia cannot keep running away from the fact that he needs a new constitution. The current constitution says we, the people, give to ourselves this constitution. But actually, we didn't. It was given to us by the military, and therefore it lacks intrinsic ownership. We need to set in motion a process that will culminate in we, the people of Wazobia, truly giving to ourselves a constitution that we all own. Like Joseph did in Egypt, Wazobia has the potential to avert famine in the entire land by recognizing the gifts that has been bestowed on it by the gods and maximizing them through raising its productive capacity. Like Joseph, Wazobia can help create a new continent that every African will be proud to call home. As we celebrate 63 years of being able to govern ourselves, Ezemore wishes everyone happy independence celebrations. And until we meet again in this market square, Ezemore says, Igobi.
Dearly beloved, we believe you've been greatly blessed by this sermon. Do you want to download more sermons of your favorite preachers? Visit www.spiritnerds.org today. Reach us by email for more information and concerns at spiritnerds.org@gmail.com. God bless you.